Start with something from the beginning of the Sedra. The Torah says, "Ki yikach ish isha." A man takes a wife. So the Gemara says that we learn how that taking is supposed to be. What does that mean? He clubs her over the head and drags her by the hair into a cave. How exactly does he take a wife? So the Gemara says that we learn it from a Gzeres Shavah. Gzeres Shavah is one of the Shloshes Remidos Shatorah Nidreshes Bohen. It's one of the rules that the Torah gave how to learn things from the Torah. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he wrote Ki Yikach Ish Isha, he meant that you should connect it to the following pasuk: Kesef Hasadeh Kach Mimeni. Avraham Avinu told Ephron that he should take the money of the field. So just like that pasuk, Kesef Hasadeh Kach Mimeni, is a monetary transaction. Somebody gives money and somebody takes it. So too, Ki Yikach Ish Isha means, when you take a woman, means with money. You have to give her something of value and say Hareat Mekudeshesli in front of witnesses, and that creates a marriage. Money. Kesef. It's one of the methods of creating a marriage, and we learn it from Kicha Kicha Misdei Ephron. We learn it from the fact that the Torah used the word Kach, Ki Yikach, and Kach Mimeni, that there's a connection between them. Some people who like to detract from the honor of the Torah and look for every possible way to do so point out that it seems that the rabbis equate buying a field and marrying a wife. I mean, we're comparing. Avraham bought a field with money, and the way you marry a woman, we learn from that, is also with money. So they say, you see, that in the eyes of the rabbis, getting married is like buying a field. And that reduces a woman to a piece of dirt. That you buy a field, buy a wife. So that's how the rabbis looked at women. That's how they looked at marriage. Women are chattel. You buy a field, buy a wife, same thing. The question really has no validity, because we're not comparing buying a field and buying a wife. We're just comparing the word kicha, that the way that you take a wife, we learn from the fact that the word kicha is used by money. So it's really not a question. But in an answer to the question, defending the Torah, which you don't have to really defend the Torah, I want to show you that not only is it not a question, but the fact that the Torah learned marriage from Avraham Avinu buying the field of Ephron is not only demeaning to women, but it is the place where you see exactly what marriage is. The answer is not something we're going to say in 2 seconds. It's a little lengthy and complicated. But if you pay attention, by the time we get to the end, you'll see very clearly that not only is it not a question, but this is the ideal place to learn marriage. Now, let's start with an Ibn Ezra, and we will eventually come back to this question. The Ibn Ezra, as well as other Rishonim, ask the following question. Why did the Torah spend so much time recording the details of how Avraham Avinu bought Shnei Ephron? What this one said and what that one said. Why didn't you say, and Avraham bought Sarah's burial plot from Ephron for 400 shekel kept? Who cares what Ephron said and what Avraham answered him and then what Ephron answered there? Many important things we learn from one extra letter in the Torah. And here the Torah went into great detail over and over to tell us how Avraham Avinu bought Shnei Ephron. Says the Ibn Ezra, the reason is to let us know how important Eretz Yisrael is L'chaim ulemesim. How much bother? How much verbal bother? How much expense Avram Avinu went to be able to bury Sarah Imenu in Eretz Yisrael, to show you how valuable Eretz Yisrael is, not only for the living, even for the dead. So the Torah went out of its way to detail every nuance of this sale, every word, every detail, to bring home this message. That's the Ibn Ezra. Says the Ramban, I don't disagree with the Ibn Ezra's conclusion that Eretz Yisrael is definitely important both for the living and even for the dead. It's something special to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. But you don't learn it from here. Because the fact that Avraham Avinu went to such trouble to bury Sarah Imenu in Eretz Yisrael doesn't teach me over here the value of Eretz Yisrael. Because Sarah Imenu died in Eretz Yisrael. So Avraham Avinu buried her there. Who says that if Sarah Imenu didn't die in Borough Park, that he would have buried her there? You bury people where they die. If Avraham Avinu had brought Sarah's body with great expense and great bother from New York to Eretz Yisrael, then we would learn that from this parsha. The Torah went to describe the bother and the expense that Avram went through to bring Sarah Imenu's body from somewhere else to Eretz Yisrael. You see how important Eretz Yisrael is. But he had a barrier, and she happened to die in Hebron, so he buried her there. So the Ramban says other reasons why the Torah went to such length and detail to tell us about this purchase. But he says that you can't see from here the importance of Eretz Yisrael, L'chaim ul'meisim, because you don't see that Avram buried her specifically in Eretz Yisrael as opposed to somewhere else. He buried her where she died. That's the Ramban's question on the Ibn Ezra. In order to answer the Ibn Ezra, I want to use a question that they ask on a different Ramban. And the answer, one of the answers to answer this Ibn Ezra. The Ramban, a very famous Ramban, which I'm sure that you have either learned or will learn. It's a few places in the Torah. The Ramban says that Eretz Yisrael is the land of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Torah was given specifically for Eretz Yisrael. And even though we keep mitzvahs outside of Eretz Yisrael, that's only after the Torah was given. Before the Torah was given, the Avos only kept the mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael, because the mitzvahs were meant intrinsically for Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, says the Ramban, that Yaakov Avinu married two sisters when he was in Chutz Laretz, because they only kept the Torah in Eretz Yisrael. And that's why Rachel Imenu died before they came back to Eretz Yisrael, that Yaakov should not be married to two sisters in Eretz Yisrael. That is a portion of what the Ramban says, a few places in the Torah. Familiar with this Ramban? Okay. There are many questions on this Ramban and many things to explain, but many Mefarshim ask on this Ramban the following very obvious question. What does the Ramban say? That Yaakov Avinu married two sisters in Chutz Laretz, and Rachel Imenu died before they returned to Eretz Yisrael, in order that he should not be married to two sisters in Eretz Yisrael. Who is buried in Kever Rachel? Excellent. That is similar to the question, who is buried in Grant's tomb? Grant. Okay. So, that's good. We're off to a good start. Rachel Imenu is buried in Kever Rachel. Where is Kever Rachel? Where? In, okay, Beis Lechem. Beis Lechem is in Eretz Yisrael, according to everybody but the people who live around there. Okay? So, and where did Rachel die? Where she's buried. In Beis Lechem. How could the Ramban say that Rachel Imenu died before they came back to Eretz Yisrael in order that Yaakov should not be married to two sisters in Eretz Yisrael if Rachel Imenu died in Eretz Yisrael and is buried in Eretz Yisrael? There are other answers to this question, but it's a very obvious question. The Ramban says Rachel Imenu died before they came back to Eretz Yisrael, and we know that she died in Eretz Yisrael. The Chassam Sofer answers this question on the Ramban in the following way. I'm going to give you a more extensive introduction to what he says, but basically, bottom line, the Chassam Sofer says what I'm going to tell you. This land that we are sitting on has many names, and the names connote various metamorphoses of this land. The land is known as Eretz HaChayim, Eretz HaKodesh. It is known as Eretz Canaan. It's known as Eretz Yisrael. The names connote that the land has different segulas to it, and the different segulas apply at different times. When the world was created, the Ribbono Shel Olam created this part of the globe to be very special. It is the highest place of the globe. This is the top, not the North Pole. This is the top of the world, Eretz Yisrael. It is the Merkaz. Everything was created from here and came out from Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael was the place where Adam HaRishon was created from. It was the place where the original Mizbeach of Adam HaRishon, the Noach, and the Akedah was. And therefore, this is a very special holy land. It's a holy land from the Bria. From the Bria and on, it's holy. And therefore, there is a mitzvah to live here. Avraham Avinu was told to come and live here. If you live here, there's special skulas that this land has, special relationship that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to the land, more and different than every other land. Eretz Asher Eini Hashem Elokecha Bo, Mereishis Hashana V'Arach Rishana, the special Hashkocha Pratis. This land is not under any other angels, it's under the Ribbono Shel Olam directly. That's all from the very inception and creation of the land itself. However, the land itself doesn't have the full kedusha that it could have as long as it belongs to other people, as long as it's Eretz Canaan. For instance, the laws of agriculture that apply to this land, Trumas, Maisris, and so on, do not apply until this land became owned by Klal Yisrael. And then it became Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam says very clearly, the laws of Truma and Maaser apply only in Eretz Yisrael, and Eretz Yisrael is the land that is either conquered or acquired by the Jewish people in certain specific ways. When it is conquered or acquired in those specific ways, then it becomes Eretz Yisrael, meaning Eretz Shel Yisrael. It's the land that belongs to Yisrael. And then it has Kedusha for Trumas, Maisris, and so on. Before Klal Yisrael conquered the land, or before we acquired it again in the time of Ezra, it didn't have that Kedusha. It was still Eretz HaKodesh. It was a holy land. It was a place to live, but it didn't have the Kedusha of Trumas and Maestras. The full Kedusha of this land is enhanced by it being connected to Klal Yisrael. When it's only Eretz Canaan Eretz HaKodesh, it has a certain Kedusha. Being connected to Klal Yisrael gives it different Kedusha, higher Kedusha. The opposite is also true. You can have land that is Eretz Yisrael, meaning it's land that belongs to the Jewish people, conquered by them or acquired by them in the proper way, and it's not Eretz HaKodesh. The Gemara says that if Klal Yisrael would conquer all of Eretz Yisrael and then go on to conquer other places, the Jewish army would go and conquer Borough Park, and it would become the property of Klal Yisrael. Then if you planted things in Borough Park, they'd be chayiv in Trumas and Maestros, because they would be Eretz Shel Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael. But there would be no mitzvah to live there. It wouldn't be Eretz HaKodesh. It would have Kedushas Trumas and Maestros because it's Eretz Shel Yisrael. But it wouldn't have the initial Kedusha of Kedushas Eretz HaKodesh, place where there's a mitzvah to live. Yishuv Eretz Yisrael only applies to Eretz Yisrael, the Eretz HaKodesh, even before Jews came here. So it's possible to have the Kedusha of Eretz HaKodesh without the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. It's possible of having Kedushas Eretz Yisrael without the Kedusha of Eretz HaKodesh. The ultimate is Kedushas Eretz Yisrael in Eretz HaKodesh. Not only that, but there are some mitzvahs in this land that don't take effect, not only if the land belongs to Klal Yisrael, but they have to actually be living here, most Jews, in the place that is designated for each Shevet. Shemitah, Yovel, only apply if Rov Yosheveh Alecha, most Jews live in Eretz Yisrael, and they live in the place they're supposed to live, according to their Shevet. Then, those mitzvahs apply. Then it reaches its full Kedusha. So there are three stages. It starts out Eretz HaKodesh, that only applies to this geographic place. No other place in the world could be Eretz HaKodesh. If that Eretz HaKodesh is owned by Jews, then it's Eretz Yisrael. Separate Kedusha, extra Kedusha. It has Kedusha for Truma and Meiser and all the agricultural laws too. If Klal Yisrael not only conquered and owned the land, but they're actually physically on the land, then it has the full Kedusha, even for Shemitah and Yovel and some other halach. Okay, that is clear? Okay. Any questions on this? I want to make sure you understand the idea, yeah? The second and the third is that Klal Yisrael can conquer the land or own the land and then go into Galus. It's still our land. Somebody stole it from us, and you can't steal land, but we're not here. So during the time that we're physically not here, the Kedusha is diminished to Eretz Yisrael, but not Eretz Yisrael with Klal Yisrael living here.
What's the third stage called?
Third stage is called Rov Yosheveh Alecha. Yeah.
Is today the third stage?
Today there's a few different problems. Since we don't know who the Shvatim are, and they surely are in their proper place, Shemitah and Yovel only is Rabbanan, according to most opinions. According to this, these guidelines, it's only Rabbanan. There are those who disagree with these guidelines, Rishonim. But according to the Rambam, yeah, it's only Rabbanan. Okay. If that's the case, says the Chasam Sofer, so in the time of Avraham Avinu, on the time of Yaakov Avinu, okay, Eretz HaKodesh applied to all of what we call Eretz Yisrael. But was it Eretz Yisrael? Or Eretz Canaan, Eretz HaKodesh? Only Eretz HaKodesh, Eretz Canaan. Wasn't Eretz Yisrael. Except for one place. One place had a din of Eretz Yisrael belonged to a Jew, which was what? Hebron, because Avraham Avinu bought it. all the rest of the land was Eretz Canaan, Eretz HaKodesh, but not Eretz Israel. The only part of this land at the time that was fit to be called Eretz Israel was the part that belonged to Avraham Avinu because he bought it. That's what the Ramban means. That that Yaakov Avinu was married to two sisters outside of Eretz Israel, meaning the full Kiddush of Eretz Israel, Hebron. And she died before they came back to that part of this land that at the time was called Eretz Israel, which was Hebron. She died in Beis Lechem, just outside of Hebron. Because had they made it back to Hebron, he would have been married to two sisters, not in Eretz Canaan, but in Eretz Israel, which would have been worse. The full Kedusha is only where it belongs to a Jew. Avraham Avinu was the first Jew, and it had the din of Eretz Israel by being owned by Yaakov, by Avraham Avinu. Not necessarily. Okay, that's the problem with this Chasam Sofer. Because it seems like they kept the Torah all over Eretz Israel. But the idea is that since he was married already to two sisters, to have one of them die only was where it was the full Kiddush of Eretz Israel. They may have kept it in all of Eretz Canaan, all of Eretz HaKodesh. But to necessitate Rachel Imenu dying, that Yaakov shouldn't be married to two sisters, was only in the place that had the full Kiddush of Eretz Israel. That's probably what the Chasam Sofer meant. Okay. Everybody with me still? If that's the case, now we have to go back to the beginning of the Sedra and understand what exactly Avraham Avinu did here. Why? What bother did he go to? Why did he buy this burial plot? What was the purpose? So let's see what happened over here. Avraham Avinu comes to Bnei Ches, and he says the following: Ger v'toshav anochi imachem, tenu li achuzas kever imachem, ve'ekbar amesi milfonai. Avraham Avinu comes and says, I'm a ger and a toshav, and therefore give me achuzas kever. Not sell me, give me. Strange, Avraham Avinu is looking for presents. Should have said, sell me an achuzas kever. And what is the meaning of ger v'toshav? Why did he preface that? So many of the Mefarshim, including the Ramban himself, the Sfarno, and others, put together a picture that I'm going to give you, which is a combination of a few different Mefarshim. And that's the following. In those days, every city had two kinds of burial plots. There was the private family plots that every family owned in perpetuity. They buried their dead there generation after generation. People didn't usually move around a lot, and parents lived where the grandparents and great-grandparents were, and the children and grandchildren lived there, and each generation buried their dead, and the next generation buried their dead. That was called an achuzas kever, a family plot. It was owned by the family, it belonged to them, and they buried their dead in their land generation after generation. Then there was another kind of cemetery in every city, and that was the regular public cemetery. Who was that for? People who didn't live in the city, who happened to die there. People were passing through, they dropped dead. They don't have an achuzas kever. And they couldn't ship their bodies back to where they came from, because many times they didn't know who they were, where they came from. And in those days, for sure, it was very difficult to bring a body somewhere else. It took days, weeks, months. So what happened if somebody died in a place that he didn't live? You buried him there. This is not even in ancient history, it's in recent history. In London, in the cemetery in London, I visited there, is the grave of Reb Lezer Telzer, Reb Lezer Gordon, who was the founder of Telzer Yeshiva in Lithuania. He was in London raising money for his yeshiva. This was in 1907, I think, the beginning of 1900s. And he died in London. And they couldn't ship his body back to Lithuania, so they buried him in London. He's buried in London, because that's where he died. So that's what they had. They had a common cemetery for people who didn't live in the city, and the people who were buried there didn't own the land. The land was owned by the city. It was public property. But they allowed people to be buried there, but the relatives of those people had no claim on the land. They just had rights of burial. Avraham Avinu comes to Bnei Ches, and he says, we got a little problem over here. Because you consider me a ger, you don't consider me a resident, a citizen of this country. You consider me a ger, I'm not a chiti. So you would want to give me a place to bury my wife in your public cemetery. I don't want that. I want an achuzas kever. I want a burial plot. Land that I will own. Land that has been zoned for a burial plot to bury my wife there. Because I'm also a toshav. Because I really am a citizen here. Because God promised me this land. And ultimately I'm going to be here generation after generation. So I want my family buried in a burial plot, a family plot. I want you to give me land that is designated as a family plot. However, all the family plots were designated basically for the families that had them. And to sell a family burial plot and make money on it was very mercenary. It's like selling your mother. It's just not done, right? People don't do that. So Avraham Avinu came to Bnei Ches and he said, I would never ask you to sell me and make money on a burial plot. So he couched it in words, please give me one. Chesed, you'll give me a burial plot, I'd be very happy. But he didn't mention selling because it would have been an insult to assume that people could sell a burial plot. But I don't want to be buried in your public property cemetery. I want an achuzas kever. That's Avraham Avinu's request. What do they answer him? Vayanu b'nei cheses Avraham le'morlo shmo'enu Adoni. Now it's interesting, in the beginning of this parasha, we have these words repeated many times. Shmo'eni Adoni, shmo'enu Adoni. Listen to me. Hear what I'm saying. It sounds like two people who are hard of hearing. We're constantly telling each other, hear what I'm saying, hear what I'm saying. What was the purpose of Shmo'enu Adoni? The answer is that they were talking about something very sensitive that couldn't be said outright, meaning I want somebody to sell me a family burial plot. You don't say that. You don't insult people. On the other hand, somebody wants to make money on their family burial plot without it being said. So everybody has to talk in hints. You get the message, understand what I'm hinting at. I can't say it openly because it's really not nice. So what do they say? They say the song, Shmo'enu Adoni. Listen carefully because we're going to tell you nicely that we will not accept your request. Nesi Elokim Atobisochenu. You are the Prince of God. However, b'mivchar kforeinu kfor es meisecha. You bury your dead in our graves. Ish mimenu es kivro lo yichle mimcha mikvor meisecha. No one will hold back his grave to let you bury your dead there. Nobody is selling you any graves. You're not going to own the land. You will get permission to bury your wife in one of our graves. Someone will give you permission to use his burial plot, but not sell it to you. It's not going to become yours. You're not going to have an achuzas kever. You're not going to have a family plot for your family. You can bury your wife in one of our family plots. And you don't own the land. We own it. But we're giving you burial rights. We'll give you one space in a family plot of ours. Vayokam Avram, Vayishtachulam Haaretz of Neches. Avram got up. He bowed down to them. Gracious. But that's not what he wants. Vayidaberi Tom Leymor. Im Yeshis Nafshechem Likboris Meisim Lufonai. If you want me to bury my wife, that's not going to happen in the way you just said it. I am not going to bury her in your land, in your family plot. Shmouni, listen carefully. Ufiguli be'Ephron ben Socher. I want you to introduce me to Ephron ben Socher. The Yitain li, he will give me. Es ma'aras ha'machpela asher lo asher, because he has a family plot that he'll give me. Can't sell it. I can't say that he'll sell it to me, because I wouldn't think that Ephron would sell a family plot. But Ephron is a very magnanimous person, and I have a feeling he'll give me that family plot. Bekesef maleit nenoli. And I will give him a reciprocal present called money. He's not chas v'shalom selling me his family plot. He's giving it to me. Very magnanimous. And because I recognize how magnanimous he is, I'm going to give him something in return, money. Not a sale, chas v'shalom. Two individual presents. He gives me this, I give him that. That's not a sale. He's not selling it. He's giving it, and I, in appreciation, will give him money. Meaning, the sale is done, but in terms that make Ephron look good. And Avram gets what he wants. B'sochechem l'achuzas kever, and then I will own that as an achuzas kever, as a family plot. Ephron has a plot. I know he'll give it to me. Very, very kind person. And out of appreciation, I'm willing to give him money. So Ephron already hears he can sell his family plot. It won't look like a sale. It looked like he's giving it to Avram, and Avram's giving him money as a present, and everybody's happy. Ephron is able to sell his family plot. Ephron would do anything for money. He'd sell his mother, but he doesn't want to look bad. So Avram Avinu gives him, that's what he said, listen carefully, I'm giving you the key how Ephron can sell me his family plot and look good. He will give it to me, and I will give him money as a present in return. He never sold his family plot. He gave it as a present. Nope. Vayan Ephron, Hachitias Avraham, Bosne ben Eches, Lechoboy Shari Lolimor. Ephron doesn't like this idea. Why not? Because, okay, he's getting money for the burial plot that he is giving as a present, but he's getting money for it. But he doesn't like that. You know why? Because he can't determine how much money. Because Avraham is giving him a present. He can't say, I think you should give me a bigger present. Then it smells like a sale. So Ephron is stuck with how much of a present Avram wants to give him in return for him giving him the present of the burial plot. So Ephron says, not interested in that. I have a better idea. Lo, Adonish Moeni. You, Avram, listen carefully. I'll give you a hint how you can get your burial plot. I will get my money, and no, it won't look like a sale. How is that? Hasode nosati loch. I gave you the field already. And the cave in this field, also I'm giving to you. Take it. Avram says, wait a second. I didn't ask for any fields. I asked for a burial cave. What's Ephron telling me? He gave me the field? What field? Avram gets the hint. What's Ephron telling him? He's telling the following. Ma'aras HaMachpela was in a field at the end of the field, the far end of the field. In order to get through there, there was only one access. You had to go through that field to get to the cave. Ephron tells Avram the following. Listen carefully and you'll hear I have a better idea how I can give you the cave and make money according to what I want to get. You're not giving me any presents of money. It's going to work like this. I'm going to give you the cave, but you're going to have to buy the field. There's nothing mercenary or not nice about selling a field. And if you don't buy the field, even if I give you the cave, it's worthless to you. Because unless you have a helicopter, there is no way that you can get to your cave because I don't give you access through my field. So if you want to be able to get to your cave, you're going to have to buy the field. And the field is not a burial plot. The field is just a field. So you can buy the field, and I'm giving you the burial plot for free. But you don't have access to it unless you buy the field, and I will tell you how much to pay for the field. Now Ephron gets everything he wants. He gets money. He gets the amount of money that he wants. He doesn't look like he sold the burial plot. All he did was sell a field. But without the field, Avram had no access to the burial plot that he got for free. And this is what Avram says. Vayishtachu Avram lefnei Amharetz, vayidaber lefron bozenei Amharetz lemor. Imaach imato lushmein. Yeah, I got the hint. Now you hear me. I got it. So here's what I'm proposing. Nosati kesef hasod dekach mimeni. Take the money for the field. I got the hint. I'm not buying the cave. Forget about the cave. Cave is a present. Thank you. I'm giving you money for the field. Ve'ekbaras meisi shama. And I will bury my dead there in the cave. Now I have access to the cave because I bought the field. Vayan Ephron es Avram le'mor lo. Adoni shmeini. He says, okay, now that you got the hint, now we know what we're doing. I'm selling you a field. You're getting the cave for free. I look good. I gave you the cave for free. I'm getting my money. How much money do I want? Eretz arba meo shekel kesef beini uvencho mahi. What's 400 shekel kesef, which is an exorbitant millions of dollars? What's a few million dollars between friends for a field? That's what Ephron said. So he exorbitantly took money from Avram, charged Avram an exorbitant fee for the field. No, there's no bush in that. You can sell a field. Avram got the burial plot for free from Ephron. Only had to spend a few million dollars to get access to it. So everybody was happy. Vayishma Avram el Ephron. Avram heard exactly what Ephron wanted. Vayishkol Avram le Ephron sakesef ashudibre bozne mireches. Arba meo shekel kesef over la socher. That was the parsha. Now, why did Avram go to all this bother? Could he have buried his wife without any expense and without any bother if he would have buried her in their land? They were willing to give it to him for free. You can have burial rights in our land, no problem. But Avram Avinu said, nothing doing. I will not bury my wife in your land. I want her buried in my land. And for that, he had to spend a tremendous amount of money, and he had to go through a tremendous amount of bother. Why? What would have been so terrible if he buried Sarah Imenu in their land? The answer, says the Ibn Ezra, because then it wouldn't have been Eretz Yisrael. It would have been Eretz HaKodesh, Eretz Canaan, but it wouldn't have been Eretz Yisrael. In order to make that plot that Sarah Imenu was buried in, Eretz Yisrael, Avram had to own the land. And we see from here, says the Ibn Ezra, how much bother and expense Avram Avinu went to bury his wife in Eretz Yisrael, not Eretz Canaan. He could have buried her where she died, but she wouldn't have been buried in Eretz Yisrael. She would have been buried in Eretz HaKodesh, Eretz Canaan. But Avram didn't want that, because he wanted her buried in Eretz Yisrael. So he went to the bother and the expense to make it Eretz Yisrael in order that his wife should be buried in Eretz Yisrael. And that's exactly what the next pasuk says. Vayokam stei Ephron. Rashi says, tkuma hoya l'sodeh. The fact that Avram Avinu bought it elevated it. Elevated it to what? Eretz Yisrael. Till now, it had a lesser kedusha. It was Eretz HaKodesh. Now it's Eretz Yisrael, higher Kedusha. And therefore, Sarah Imenu is buried in Eretz Yisrael. Much more beneficial than being buried just in Eretz HaKodesh or in Eretz Canaan. What do we see from here? Bottom line, Avraham Avinu was interested in buying real estate. That's why he bought this field. He wanted some land. No. There's only one reason why Avraham Avinu bought that field. So he would be able to own the land and elevate it to the level of Eretz Yisrael so his wife could be buried in Eretz Yisrael. What do you see from here? That the transaction, the money that Avraham Avinu gave for the field, money is something desirable. Kesef. Kesef comes to the lashon of kisufim. Desires. You want something. You want to make a bond with it. So you give kesef, something desirable to you. It bonds you to the thing that you're buying. Here, Avraham Avinu was not interested in having real estate. He was interested in creating a bond with the land to elevate it to be Eretz Yisrael. And then that same Eretz Yisrael would have a good effect on his wife who was buried there. So it's a symbiotic relationship. Klal Yisrael, Avraham Avinu, who represents Klal Yisrael, elevates the land to the level of Eretz Yisrael, and the land elevated to that level has a tremendous effect even on the dead, that being buried in that extra kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is beneficial to the dead, surely to the living who live there. So this transaction was a real estate transaction, or the bonding of the neshama of Eretz Yisrael with the neshama of Avraham Avinu and Sarah. What's marriage? Marriage is you give something of value that bonds two neshamas together and elevates both of them. You bond the chosen to the kala. The chosen elevates the kala to a new level of no longer an individual but part of a pair. And the kala elevates the chosen to that level. Two bondings of neshama that's created by giving something of value. That's exactly what the buying of this field was. Avraham Avinu bought it to bond his neshama with it, to elevate it to the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, so his wife could be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Isn't that what marriage is? So we're not learning marriage from a real estate deal, some mercenary acquisition. We're learning it exactly what marriage is. Avraham Avinu bought Sadeh Ephron so he could bond his neshama and elevate it to the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, and at the same time that kedusha have an effect on himself and his wife, which is exactly what marriage is. Two people bonding their neshamas together through something of value, each one elevating the other one. Okay? So not only is it not a question, but if you understand what went on with Avram's purchase of this field, it is the most ideal place to learn marriage, is where the Torah said to learn marriage from Avraham Avinu buying this field. It has nothing to do with a mercenary acquisition of land, right, with a kinyan of real estate. It has to do with what the underpinnings of marriage is, was the underpinnings of the buying of this field. You understand? Okay. Let's go to something a little more easy. Something for the middle of the Seder. When Eliezer asks Rivka to give him a drink of water, so she responds, okay. She gives him a drink of water. He finishes drinking. And then she says, okay, how about for your camels? She offers to give the camels, and he accepts the offer, and she gives all his camels. That's how it happened. That's how the Torah says it happened. When Eliezer tells over the story, he changes it. When Eliezer tells over the story, he says the following. Va'ovo hayom elo'ayim. Okay, he says, V'yomarti eleho hashki'ini no ma'ay mikadeich. I said to her, could you give me a little water? The Omra Eli, and she said to me, Gam Atosha say, the Gam Ligmalecha Eshov. That's what she said. Now here it is. It says, what's it called? Ani tera machalela daber libi, vihine rivka yotzeis vikad al shichma, vaterit ho'aino vatishav, va'omra ileh hashkinina. She filled up her jug, and I said to her, could you give me a little water to drink? Vatamayer vatorit kado me'aleh, she took off the jug, vatomer, and she said to me, shasei v'gam gimalecha ashke, drink, and I'll give you for camels too. And then I drank, and then she gave me for the camels. That's not what happened. What really happened was, she said drink, he drank, then she offered for the camels. When Eliezer told it over, he changed it. And he said, I asked her for a drink, she said drink, and I'll give you for the camels, and then I drank. But she offered everything right up front. Why did Eliezer change what happened? He lied. It didn't happen that way. So let me tell you what I think. There is a rule that we learned in last week's Sedra. Tzadikim omrim ma'at va'osim harbei, and Rishoyim omrim harbei va'afilu ma'at einam osim. Tzadikim promise you a little bit, but in the end they do a lot. Rishoyim promise you a lot, and in the end they don't even do a little bit. Now we normally learn that tzaddikim are honest people, and they promise a little bit, but they do even more than they promise. And Rishoyim, a bunch of liars. They promise you the world, like politicians, and they do nothing. And they, just a bunch of liars. Says the Tel Zerah Yeshiva, the Shurei Das, no, that's not the case. It's a much deeper idea. He says like this, Rishoyim would like very much to do a lot for people. Not that they're liars. They really intend to do a lot. They promise you a lot. But they don't recognize that they have a Yetzer Hara, that there are conditions beyond their control that they may not be able to fulfill what they said. So they promise you the world, not taking in consideration their Yetzer Hara, their limitations, and therefore the first little thing that comes along trips them up. They're not prepared. They don't anticipate it. If you don't anticipate problems, then the littlest problem is going to stop you. Tzaddikim, on the other hand, know they have a Yetzer Hara. They know that they are not all-powerful, that there are many things that could stop them from doing what they would like to do. Taking that in consideration, they promise you a little bit. But because they anticipate the problems, anticipate the Yetzer Haras, they're able to overcome it. And therefore, they end up doing a lot. So a tzaddik anticipates his shortcomings and Yetzer Hara, and because he anticipates it, he can't promise you a lot. But because he anticipates it, he's able to overcome it, and he gives you a lot. He does a lot. The Rasha would love to do a lot. He doesn't recognize he has shortcomings or a Yetzer Hara. He thinks he could do anything. He promises the world, and he means it. But since he didn't anticipate the Yetzer Hara, and he didn't anticipate the problems, then when they come, he's unprepared for them, and they trip him up. So he doesn't accomplish anything. He does very little. That is how the Shurei Das explains, and he explains a Gemara based on that. The Gemara says that in the future, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take the Yetzer Hara, the Satan, and shecht him. He's going to reach his goal, just like an animal when you shecht it, reaches its tafkid. The Yetzer Hara will reach its tafkid, won't be necessary anymore. So God will take him out of commission. And the Yetzer Hara, the Satan, will appear to the tzaddikim and rishoyim who will be sitting there crying. To the tzaddikim, the Yetzer Hara will appear like a big mountain. And they'll be crying, the tzaddikim, how did we conquer this mountain? To the rishoyim, the Yetzer Hara will appear like a hare. And they'll be crying, how did we not conquer this hare? Says the Shurei Das, that's the idea. The tzaddikim always anticipated their Yetzer Hara. So they were able to overcome it, and then overcome the next stage and the next stage, until they encountered a mountain of Yetzer Hara that they were able to conquer, because they anticipated it step after step. The Rishayim never anticipated the Yetzer Hara. So the first little hair's breadth that came their way, they stumbled over. They never got past that. The Rishayim never got past the first little Yetzer Hara. So every Yetzer Hara appeared to them like a hair's breadth. The Tzaddikim overcame the Yetzer Hara over and over till it became like a big mountain. Okay, if that's the case, let's go back to here. Rivka was a tzaddikus, so was Eliezer. Lavan and Besuel were Rishoyim. Okay? When Eliezer asked Rivka for a drink, she responded like a tzaddik responds. She just said, I'll give you the drink. She didn't promise anything more than that. If I can do that, then we'll do more. She gave him the drink. She went on, now she offered for the camels. She's Omer Ma'at Va'osah Harbe. She promised a little in the beginning, and she ended up doing a lot. Because she anticipated her Yetzer Hara. She didn't promise the world. She didn't say anything about the camels till she finished giving him. When she saw she could do that, she went on. That's how a tzaddik functions. But a Rasha looks at things differently. A Rasha says, no, promise the world. Because that's what you should do. If you're a good, big person, promise the world. And do it. But they never end up doing it because they don't anticipate the problems. Okay. What was Eliezer trying to impress upon Besuel and Lavan? That their sister was a very special little girl. She really excelled. Now, in the language of tzaddikim, if he told her what she actually did, it would make an impression on them. Wow, she said a little bit and she did so much. That's a really special person. But in the language of Rishoyim, that's not good. If you want to bring across the message that this girl is special to a Rasha, you have to say it in his language. She promised me the world and produced it. So you have to speak their language. So therefore, Eliezer wanted to bring across a point. The sister is special. Had he said what she said, they wouldn't have realized she's special. Because in their terminology, that's not a big thing. That's no good. So you had to change it to fit how they say it in order that they should get the message. He said the truth, but he had to say it in their language. I'll give you an example to this. An example from the world, an example from the Gemara. From the world. Imagine a disease that I just made up called audio dyslexia. Dyslexia, you know, is where you see things backwards. Audio dyslexia is where you hear things backwards. When somebody says yes, you hear no. When somebody says no, you hear yes. I think some of my kids had that when they were growing up. Now, if you're speaking to a person that you know has that disease, and he says to you, is it dark out now? What do you have to say the truth? No. Because you know that he's going to hear yes. If you say yes, he's going to hear no. So even though when you say yes, you're saying the truth, but since you know it's going to be converted to his ears to be no, you're saying a lie. So you have to say it the way that he'll hear it in order for it to be the truth. The Gemara says that Rav had a, for whatever reason, a very temperamental wife. And if he asked for eggs for breakfast, she gave him cereal. And if he asked for cereal, she gave him eggs. He never got what he wanted. She always gave him the opposite. When his son, Reb Chiya, got older, so he saw what the mother's doing to the father never gets what he wants for breakfast. So one day Rav said to his son, tell your mother I want cereal. So Reb Chiya told the mother he wants eggs. Eggs? She gave him cereal. So he got what he wanted. So he said to Reb Chiya, is your mother okay? It's the first time in my life that I ever got for breakfast what I asked for. He said, no, I switched it around. I told her you wanted eggs, so she gave you cereal. He said, you're smarter than I am, but don't do that because you're going to teach yourself to lie. But that in itself wasn't a lie. Because he knows that when he says eggs, she means cereal. So if you want cereal, you have to say eggs. It's not a lie. You are speaking in the language that the person hears. That's not lying. So too, Eliezer didn't lie. If I would have said, Eliezer said, what she actually did, and that really brought out what kind of special girl she was, in the ears of a Rishayim, that's no big deal. They understand the opposite. Say a lot, and at least do something. But say a little, that's no big deal. So Eliezer wanted to tell them she's a special girl. He couldn't say it in the language of Tzadikim. He had to say it in the language of Rishayim. But the message was Emes. She's a very special girl. But you'll hear that message in this mode, even though it happened in a different mode, because she said what a tzaddik says. You have to hear the way Russia hears it in order to understand that she's somebody special.